Welcome to the Center for Internet Security's podcast, Cybersecurity Where You Are. Cybersecurity affects us all, whether we are at home, managing a company, supporting clients, or even running a state or local government. Join CIS's Sean Atkinson and Tony Sager as they discuss trends and threats, ways to implement controls and infrastructure, explore best practices, and interview experts in the industry. We are here to bring clarity to these complex issues to bring confidence in the connected world.
Well, welcome back to the CIS podcast series, Cybersecurity Where You Are. I'm joined this episode by my co-host, Sean Atkinson. Hello, Sean.
Tony, how are you?
Great, thank you. Great to have you join us. And really excited for the guest today. It's an old friend of mine, Lisa Young of Netflix, one of my favorite metrics and quantification and risk of decision-making people in the entire industry. Lisa, welcome to the show, and please tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm so excited to be here. Thank you, Tony, for the invitation. And so I'm Lisa Young, and I am a longtime practitioner in the cybersecurity risk quantification and metrics field. And I happen to work at the moment across the security, privacy, and corporate engineering in the governance, risk, compliance, enterprise continuity, and metrics space at Netflix. So I'm a senior engineer there. And thank you for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. And like with all of our podcasts, I know we welcome your opinions, and you don't represent the corporate position here today, but we'll benefit from your experience across that. So let me start with this, Lisa. One of the things I really enjoy about talking to you about is you have a real resume, I call it. Had a lot of different jobs, you know, from auditing, consulting, you know, all kinds of ranges of things. And you know, the richness of the career, I think, has helped shape your view about risk, right? And the insight into how people make decisions about risk, but also bringing the technical component of quantification about it. Can you give us kind of a broad brush of how that career has helped shape your thinking on that and kind of where you are now in your thinking?
Sure. So I think I really got interested in risk when I went to work at CERT. And we were an applied research facility. And there was so many smart people thinking up cybersecurity solutions. Like, what are we going to do to combat these threat actors? What are we going to do to learn more about them and how to make sure that, you know, we don't succumb to any of their nefarious actions? And so part of our mission was to figure out how to help mostly government defense industrial base, but also commercial companies, because the defense industrial base is largely a lot of large public facing companies, you know, how to help them actually put their resources towards things that were going to both protect and sustain and make the organization resilient over time. And there's a lot of things that do work in cybersecurity, and there's a lot of things that don't work. And so part of my role at Netflix is to help us sort of figure out by measuring what actually works, what doesn't work, what should we optimize. We're not a compliance-driven company. There are many organizations that are compliance-driven, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. We comply. We're not out of compliance. We're, you know, it's non-negotiable in many arenas. But what's different is we try to optimize for both practices and controls, and we don't use controls language exclusively. We say practices and controls that help us both optimize coverage and optimize efficacy of things that need to be done to make sure that we are both protecting and sustaining all of the various business units across Netflix, because we're not just streaming anymore, right? We have live television, we have gaming, we have many different facets. We have studio production. We own a lot of our own studios now. So there's a lot of variety of types of businesses, everything from small startup, you know, portions of the organization to the larger corporate entity.
Yeah, that's an amazing variety, right? And I would suspect that for a lot of those activities, thinking about risk is a relatively new process, at least the way we think of it is in a technical sense, in a cyber sense.
Yes. And we have a very strong, I'll say we have a great risk team. We've been doing quantitative risk for nearly 5 years. And that that drives a lot of the investments we make in programs, you know, to understand what our top level risks. You might imagine, as many of you do, and you know, if you do have to report to the board, there's a sort of a bucket list of, let's say, 8 to 10 big buckets of risk. But underneath that, there's hundreds of different types of sub-risk is what we call them, across the business that look very differently depending on what it is that your portion of the business does for a living. And so making sure that, you know, you are truly understanding what the risk is, and then what are the practices and controls that need to be optimized for managing that? And then how do we determine investments and optimization? You know, one of the things that our metrics program helps us do is optimize the controls, not for things to be over controlled, but to be appropriately controlled with the level of access that's needed across different areas of the business.
And are they some of the factors in there, like creating systems that are consumer friendly, yet you have high confidence in? Are those the kinds of trade-offs that you have to deal with?
Yes, and think about all of the partners too that we, you know, we partner with in the various communities, not just to make content, but also to deliver content. And think about, you know, how we sell our service to a variety of consumers. So I'm not the expert in that, but I can say from a, you know, one of the things that we've been working on, you know, across the organization is when I first started a couple of years ago, we had this moniker that we were data rich, but metrics poor. And what we wanted to do was shape some of those based on security outcomes. Like, what are the security outcomes that we want to have across the business? And again, different business units appear very differently. And how do we want to make sure that the practices we deploy and the controls that we deploy support the outcome across the different brands underneath the Netflix umbrella?
And so when you came into Netflix, I mean, were you walking to an ongoing, relatively mature risk management machine, or did you have to kind of create the concepts and the structure?
No, and that's actually what's made my job so much easier, is that they had a robust risk process, both identification of risks and analytics, right? So we don't do a typical sort of control assessment. We actually do look at the business and say, what are the things that keep you up? What are the things you're concerned about? Not just in security and technology, but in a variety of areas. And so you need a robust risk identification process. The other thing that I've seen in my past that organizations don't have is they don't have an opportunity for people to raise what they feel are risky areas of the business, right? I used to work in a healthcare situation. And, you know, one of the things that we would do once a year is train people on what to look for that was specific to their environment and give them an opportunity. If you feel that something doesn't look right, it's like that see something, say something that we all know. It's how do you raise it to a risk identification process so that someone can then take a little bit deeper dive, right? And they can understand, you know, is this acceptable? Is this not acceptable? Should we do a quantitative analysis? Not everything requires a quantitative analysis, but it is good for talking to the business leaders in terms of both money, time, you know, resources, and how we're gonna apply the resources optimally, right? Despite what people think, we are a very thrifty, like we're a very thrifty organization, and we don't waste resources or money on things that don't give us the best outcome. Right?
Yeah, Lisa, that's really insightful. That culture, you know, sounds like the right kind of risk thinking culture that we don't see very often in technology companies, for example, who are closer to technology, but maybe not as mature in their business thinking. Sean, you know, as a CISO for a security company, does this resonate? Is this the kind of discussion and the kind of thinking about risk as you put together our program and discuss it with our leadership and our board? Does that make sense to you?
Oh, no question. You know, what it brings to the table, and I love the contextually aware approach, because it's one of the things that we've run into is using quantification for everything. The number is going to tell me what to do. No. Hold on. This is a decision point. This is not telling you how to do things. This is an approach to allow you to take some, you know, different angles, as it were, to assess risk. But you've got to add the context. The number doesn't tell you everything, and it's ultimately not a responsible way of addressing mitigation, or at least a risk treatment strategy. Well, the number says 5. That means I should accept. What do you mean? we've got to assess this appropriately. You can't just, you know, and we fall into these traps because one of the things, you know, is becoming a data aware, you know, we're in the data era and this AI generative approach is, that's all well and good. Love the technology. Let's see how we can apply it. But we've got to have the thinking in play. It's not just an algorithm and gives me an answer and then I walk away and, oh, I'm all set. My job's done. You know, Lisa's job's done. We're just walking away. Let the number tell it. No. We've got to build an approach where we can use this as a communication vehicle, but it's also an awareness element that we want to bring to the table. This is what it's telling us, but this is what the business says. This is how we integrate. Now you build your matrices as an approach to risk identification, even alignment in some cases to an appetite and tolerance. That leads us, Lisa, into, I think, having better, more engaged conversations in this space.
Oh, without a doubt. And I will say there's, I'll pull this apart. And I know, I think you're going to ask me a little while about CIRA, the Society of Information Risk Analysts. But one of the things that we found is that if you're looking at the probability of some risk materializing, that's sort of, yes, you can quantify that. You know, you can make estimates and you can sort of look at that and you get a number. But the other side of the equation is, what would the impact be if, in fact, that risk were realized? And we need decisioning on both sides of the equation, not just the probability side. And so some people fall fallacy to what you just said, Sean, is about the number tells me what to do. And that's just not true. The other thing you have to have to go along with anything, whether you use a qualitative or quantitative approach or some hybrid, is that you need the ability to have a risk acceptance, explicit risk acceptance process. And what that means to me is, as a risk advisor, let's just say in a business, my job is to let the person who's the P&L or who's the decision maker decide, is the probability of this so scary that I should apply resources to try to prevent it or mitigate it? Or is the impact so scary that I should actually do something else, you know, in terms of buying some insurance or another mitigating type of risk transfer control? But the other thing is, as a business leader, I also, even if I'm not a risk expert, I am a person who knows my business better than anybody. And I get to make the decision about whether or not I accept the risk of the probability or the risk of the impact. And I get to say, okay, I'm explicitly signing off on this. And in most public companies, I'll say that's a very intuitive, but also experiential decisioning point that our data informs, but it can't overcome someone's years of expertise in a particular line of business.
Yeah, you know, as I listen to you, so you're two of my favorite risk thinkers here on this podcast. And it's fascinating to watch you two in action. Because I get this the sort of mental image I have is, you know, again, you're not quantifying for quantifying's sake and all that kind of stuff, all the things that you said. You're more like conductors of a jazz combo or something, leading people through a conversation, pulling them back right when they want to dig into the interesting technical stuff, you know, raising them up right. What is about the outcomes? And it's as much this sort of I'll say conducting right. You're guiding people along a decision process that both takes advantage of quantification and data, but also, and your point, Lisa, you know, this is about business judgment, you know, things that can be hard to quantify, right? And that don't lend themselves to sort of algorithmic expression. So being able to tie all that together, Joe, you're right. Everyone wants you to say, if I turn it to 11, will I be okay, you know, or whatever. And that's just not the way the world works. And it's also not the point, right? The point is business leaders get paid to make decisions and we want them to do so in the most knowing, kind of rational, explainable way. And so I just listening to you two talk, it's like I'm observing this, you know, pushing the cats and making them go in the right direction and have the conversation and take them so that they conclude as opposed to you conclude and they, you recommend and they make a decision. That's the what I'm taking from this conversation. Does that sound about right?
Yes.
Oh, it certainly does. It certainly does. I'd like to go with the conductor piece because, Lisa, I want to get your thoughts on this. It's conducting, but when everybody's on a different sheet of music, there's your huge problem. There is no harmony. It's just noise. And then it becomes this abstraction from actual value generation. And then that's when it's done just to do something, right? We've got to build the harmony so we're all kind of in phase with one another so that we can approach this from really the whole of business, a holistic perspective of the risk program. Yes, it will focus on specific areas of the business, but if we can do that, that is the key, Tony. If you can get everybody kind of working towards the same element.
No, that's
absolutely.
And I have a musical background. That's why I said jazz combo. I said because there isn't a written score here, right? You are, in fact,
no.
There's a bit of ad libbing along the way.
Sean, I want to hear from you because it's very challenging to holistically measure the success of a security program. Period. Because remember, for however many years we've been saying, well, if nothing happens, it must be okay. Right? And that's not a good measure. So when you think about risk, we try to talk about it in terms of uncertainty. But where I've had some, I'll say, thread pulling that has been a little bit successful is to separate the risk identification process, okay, from the controls identification process, right? Because you're still talking to two different camps usually, right? And so when you do that, ask the people who are in charge of controls, what does that control matter to which risks, you know, and sort of have them think about it that way. When you ask the risk people, well, what would you do to mitigate that? You get a different, viewpoint. And if you can harmonize those, you know, we happen to use, we use the Modern Attack Framework as the basis of running through our risk scenarios. We run through capability assessments, risk scenarios, you know, and then we look at our coverage and effectiveness of any controls that would help there. But more importantly, it's like which, you know, controls matter to which techniques or tactics, which risks matter to which controls. And so as you get people to start talking about that and put the risk aside, put the risk decisioning aside, you get much more on the ground, I'll say, truth of what is operating or what could be operating better than it actually is in theory, right? I'm a former auditor. I think, Tony, you mentioned this in the beginning. And so, you know, when you think about audit as conformance to a set of criteria, it's a very important function. You think about risk as uncertainty and may or may not happen in the future. They still need to be harmonized to play a better, you know, I'm a big fan of jazz, but, you know, to play. But the goal of the metrics program for us is to optimize asset protections and sustainabilities commensurate with the risk. Like we call that, and I know it's called a lot of things, like they call it continuous assurance, which I love that word, but we actually call it just assurance. And we separate that from compliance in a way that lets us optimize, like to choose which scenarios, which protections, which sustainments, and optimize those controls commensurate with the risk and the business. I mean, the business needs and the risk to the business. I'll say it that way.
Yeah, that was sort of in the middle of the evolution of cyber when I was at the National Security Agency. We renamed ourselves the Information Assurance Agency. And I found the person who actually suggested that. And I was so impressed by the idea because what it implied, right, moving from we're in the security business, right, a state of whatever magnificent being that apparently we're never going to get to. But assurance was meant to imply measurement, that at what level of confidence do I have in my ability, for example, as a warfighter to project force or, you know, whatever your business model is. It's never going to be about perfection. It's going to be about confidence that if I want this to happen, it will happen. And so that is a much more complex and nuanced thing. It also implies you're doing a lot of measuring, right? There was no, if I followed all the processes of DOD, whatever, then it'll, you know, I'm okay with the result. It's, I need to measure because the context is changing. The conditions are changing all the time. And so I have to think of this as a decision-making machine. Now, I'm not sure we ever took the conceptual model and built it into the way the organization operated, you know, say in the 90s and early 2000s. But I never forgot that like, yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. And again, that's what I hear folks like you describe, right? This sort of thinking about this, and it's not about magic answer. It's about guiding the team, right, to do what they want to do or they need to do to make these decisions. I cannot tell you, and I think Lisa, you've probably heard this. Again, I come from a DOD warfighting context. How many decision makers, at the end of the day, they would stop the meeting. I accept the risk. And they would sign whatever magnificent piece of paper. And the painful part was you knew that wasn't a knowing calculation, harmonizing. It was complete frustration with the gobbledygook of technical controls and billions of probes running around. And, you know, they just couldn't make sense of it. And our community didn't help them make sense of it. And it was just frustration. And so, you know, that was a, you know, likely to be a terrible decision. But I saw it, you know, happen over and over again. It's painful.
Yeah.
And it's so far from where you described. Oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, everyone is still struggling. It's not a perfect thing. Because if it were, we would all be doing it.
We'd have to go find honest work.
It's definitely imperfect.
Yeah, exactly.
So, right? I mean, come on. You know, if we could solve this problem with technology, we would have solved this problem with technology a long time ago. And I happen to, you know, think that people are not our weakest link, but actually our biggest strength. The difficulty that we have is that we don't enable, empower, educate. Tony, you know, we've had the benefit of, and Sean, you too, probably working in DC, the benefit of having lunch, dinner, or coffee with someone who you never in a million years would ever have. Well, I happened to sit across from the, I was at the National Press Club and sat across from the president of Estonia several years ago. And he said to me, you know, Lisa, in your country, you teach people to be users. In our country, we teach people to be systems thinkers. And if we could get to a mechanism by which we taught people that cybersecurity is an ecosystem and it's not just one thing, you know, it is people, process, technology, but it's not just one thing. It's not, there is no cyber. You try to define cyber, there's no one thing. And so if we could help people connect themselves to sort of, you know, I'm a big cyber physical, like a digital, if we look at the underpinnings of our entire critical infrastructure, it's all cyber physical or some sort of physical and technology, you know, and we got to do a better job or we won't be very successful.
No, it's wonderful, Lisa. Yeah, you're right. That's an interesting anecdote about the president of Estonia. And I think that really rings too, because, you know, I mean, looking at a couple of papers right now, which are about, you know, let's march to secure software, or whatever the flag of the day is. And how many, we've seen that one for decades. And, you know, the point is there won't be perfect software, at least not as we visualize it in my time, right? At the end of the day, I always say security and insecurity are system effects. That is,
yes.
You don't really understand them except in the sense of they are part of now of a complicated, you know, cyber-physical system, part of a decision-making machine. And so the point is not to, we do need better components, right? The components for which we understand their security properties, right? A piece of software, a piece of hardware, and all that. But at the end of the day, system is a composition problem. And so, you know, part of risk thinking is to be able to pull lots of different pieces together and sort of help decision makers make sense of this, and there is no answer to speak up, right? There's a process to get us there. And the point, as you emphasize, is to make decisions, not to admire and understand, but to, you know, to make a decision with some sort of measurement of confidence, right?
And it's not a one-way door. You know, when you think about a decision that we make every single day, every single one of us makes bunches of decisions. Once you walk through that door, it doesn't mean you can't turn around and walk out or walk through a different door or take a different path, right? You know, there's a lot of, I think security practitioners are often rigid in their belief that if they do these set things, that they will have achieved security. And you never achieve it. You just continue to manage it as best you can. So I'll just say, for me, I'm a process weenie and I own that and I love that, because despite the domain specific practices that are evolving every single day in any given technology, we still have to have standard, repeatable, documentable processes so that we can share information, so that we can have a consistent way of doing something, or at least more consistent. It helps with the decisioning, right? And so I'm still an advocate of defining a process as best with the guardrails that are in place, measuring that process, and then figuring out where you can do it a little bit better.
So here's a bit of a left field question for you, Lisa. So in this thinking about risk, corporate risk decision-making and all these kinds of things, one of the things we've been thinking a lot about here at CIS is the role of public policy, regulation, and so forth, to encourage or discourage behaviors. So what do you think are the, what things should be happening, or would you like to see happening in public policy that would encourage this kind of thinking, right? Because it stands out. You know, you have such an amazing track record in this. Sean, I get to watch every day in our business here, and you know, it's just really impressive. But these feel like the exception rather than the rule, right? These are not mainstream for lots of enterprises. So what could we do with that lever of public policy and so forth to help encourage us?
So I think, you know, there's been a lot of talk about a cyber statistics security bureau and a variety of things. And, you know, I would like to see a little less regulation and a little more harmonization of standards. Because when you start to peel the onion and, you know, I used to map standards for a living at CERT, you know, when you start pulling back the covers, it's really all about similar, you know, their Venn diagram, and a lot of them overlap quite a bit. And so I would like to actually see a little less regulation and a little more outcome-based harmonization of standards, because regulatory action sometimes has unintended consequences, as we know, and it drives people to be compliant, but not necessarily to have all the other quality attributes that security would like to, what security needs. And Sean, I'd love to hear your story, because you're in it. You're in the thick of it probably even more than me, because
I'm
not in the government service anymore.
Yes. No, you're 100% right. I mean, because when you get to, and you put it succinctly before, is that destination piece. Compliance is that destination for a lot of people. I've done this. I'm done. I meet what is written. And Tony, you know, I'm going to say it, but it's the fog of maw. And so I owe you some more money again. But that is, I mean, if you talk about the bullseye of what we're seeing, all it is more control and more documentation. There's an updated, you know, NIST CSF 2.0 just came out. Fantastic.
Yep.
We've got AI governance controls, AI risk management frameworks. We're inundated with all of what should be done. But I think the key component is the how. And that's, you know, in a lot of elements, Tony, the envisionment, the genius of the CIS controls is to get to the operational implementation. And that's what a lot of them lack, basically, because I say this, Lisa, and it's, you know, with good security, the byproduct is compliance, but you've got the other qualities in play. You're able to address and align to a process of risk. And I love the way you would mention the separation between the control owners. One of the things I had done in the organization for that harmonization is to bring the control owners and the risk owners together. Let's talk about processes. Let's get on that same page and let's really start to address an approach that is sustainable, repeatable. I'm from audit, so auditable. We've got to have each other's backs there. And it leads us then to a capability that I think gets us closer to system thinking and more from this rigid approach of 1+1 = compliance, where it's no, that there's nuance, there's a differentiation that we need to appreciate and incorporate. So I'll hand it back to you, Tony.
And I love what you said. I know we're almost out of time. I love what you said about compliance as a byproduct of doing the right thing, right? So that is the ultimate outcome that I would love to see across many different security organizations. But I've also seen organizations that only have control owners and don't have risk owners. And if you don't have them at all, but if you certainly don't have them talking to each other, it does not help you get what you need.
So we're in harmony with you on the issues of more harmonization of regulation. Let's focus. You also mentioned something around what I used to call standard plumbing, right? How do I facilitate the conversation, the movement of data, the expression of requirements, and all that? That needs to be standardized to sort of remove that friction part. So the content, which is separate, can be shared, moved, collected, and all that kind of stuff. So I think we're absolutely in in the spirit with you on all that. Let me take one more question at you here, Lisa, around your role with CIRA, the Society of Information Risk Analysis. So you and I have had a conversation a couple times over this. I'm finally getting off the horse here and putting a proposal to come actually meet with your crowd that you've been guiding for these years.
Excited.
Tell me about that community. Give me a little help here to get ready for them.
So CIRA came together in 2010. It's been really a group of practitioners who wanted to better understand the elements of risk factors that could be quantified and risk factors that may not be able to be easily quantified. And so the community's been around for a long time. We've only missed 1 year of having an annual conference. This year it's in August in Boston. And I hope, Tony, you're coming to join us. But every year we have a different topic, you know, measuring the extreme, measuring intangibles. You know, it is more of a measure. I'll say it's a risk analyst and data science heavy crowd, but practitioners who are heavily in the GRC, expanded GRC space, trying to figure out how to measure a variety of those things, measure the governance, measure the risk, measure the compliance, measure the, you know, understand the dollars and cents around risks, but also understand what control modeling looks like. It's a practical community, a community of practitioners who are interested in better measurement around risk, risk quantification, controls, and, you know, how do we move towards and away from too much emphasis on probability versus too little impact, you know, emphasis on impact. I'll say it that way. So it's a great community. And I've been a member. I'm actually the president of the board. This year I will step down. Finally, I will step down and I have a successor in place. So I'm very excited about that. And as you know, I serve on the ISC2 board. And one of our initiatives is the harmonization of global, being your advocate for the harmonization of global regulatory standards and guidelines. Because gotcha. What we're seeing in the marketplace.
Let's chat about that sometime.
Yes.
Okay, absolutely.
We're seeing in the marketplace every single country wanting to regulate the cyber profession.
We're with you. And it's the potential for chaos is growing. So absolutely. As far as CIRA goes, though, yes, you've been gently guiding me towards the CIRA community. I do, as you know, I peek in on webcasts occasionally and try to track what you're doing. And I'm really excited. A lot of very bright people, a lot of great ideas. So I'm looking forward to it. Yes, I'll join you in August up there. And but to the general topic again, Lisa, I really appreciate your insight. Any last thought you care to leave with the audience?
No, I just want to say thank you, Tony, and thank you, Sean, for allowing me to opine on all of this stuff. These are my opinions from a long time in this field, not representing Netflix specifically, but I am very happy that that I have an opportunity there to actually put some of the things that I have thought about for a long time into practice. You know, that's the part that I'm really enjoying is that they embrace, you know, they embrace a different approach. So it's actually kind of an experimental, really nice.
Again, as the observer of two of my favorite risk people. And by the way, you're also two of the happiest risk people that I know, you know, who are not frustrated that no one will listen, but you're both parts of the decision-making machinery at really different companies. And again, my experience has been that's pretty rare that you guys have found ways to turn this into reality. So I'm so excited to have the chance to chat with you, Lisa. As always, it's very insightful and very enjoyable too. Sean, and it was great. You were both co-host and guest here to share your insights on the risk. And you know, I get to every day to see you in action here at CIS and the role that you play, and really appreciate that. So with that, then to our audience, thanks for joining us. We know your time is precious, and we certainly appreciate your time spent with us. As usual, at least for the co-hosts here, a fascinating guest and a fascinating conversation. With that, please subscribe to us in the usual way. Join us for the next episode of Cybersecurity Where You Are. Thank you again, Lisa.
Bye. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the show today. The thoughts and opinions expressed by our podcast guests are solely theirs and do not necessarily reflect those of CIS. If you're interested in learning more about how to grow your cybersecurity program, the free tools available to help you on your journey, or to get involved with the CIS volunteer community, visit our website, cisecurity.org. Start secure and stay secure.
Looking to get ahead of your compliance-related costs? CIS Secure Suite comes with benefits, tools, and resources for building a sustainable governance, risk, and compliance program. Now through April 1st, save up to 20% on creating your GRC program with promo code GRC2024. Get started today at cisecurity.org/CIS-SecureSuite.